Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to Clan Chat. The team are currently out of action for the time being, so we have decided to find out more about the head coach, Malcolm Cameron. I'm Craig Anderson, and in a change of pace for this edition, I decided to investigate more about the man behind the bench, what motivates him, dealing with players, and what makes him tick during his 23-year career. It promises to be a fascinating insight as we delve into the life of an ice hockey coach. First up, I asked Malcolm what, in his opinion, is the key to being a successful coach.
Passion. Passion, preparation, for sure. I mean, if you're really passionate about the game, you want to get better each and every day. That's not just making your players better, but making your teams better, making individual people better, lines, defense pairs, power play, all of those things. That comes with passion. But you also want to get better yourself each and every day as a coach and not be too stubborn and learn. So like when I was a young coach, I was really eager and ambitious. So I leaned on a lot of veteran coaches to gain knowledge and wasn't afraid to ask things. And I took a little bit of everybody that I worked with and maybe coached against and kind of made it my own. And for me, I hate to lose. I know losing in sports is inevitable. I don't have to like that part of it. But, for me, it's about preparing my team to give them the best chance to win, you know, and that's doing video and doing scenarios and practice, making sure that we're good at what we do and that the style of play that we play matches the personnel on our hockey club. So, you know, that's one thing I've always taken pride in. The other thing that I really love the challenge of coaching is being able to watch a team that we're going to compete against and finding a way to beat them, breaking them down on film, breaking them down tactically to give us the best chance for success. And I really love that part of the game. For me, that's as close as you can come to playing. When you retire, that's the thing you miss the most is the competition, the day in, the day out grind, the one-on-one competition on the ice. And that part of coaching is as close to playing as you can get.
So what made you want to go down that road? And when did you decide that, no, coaching's what I want to do with my career here?
Kind of my second year pro. I really, really enjoyed, you know, I became more interested in the tactical and the technical side and the strategy part of the game, more so than just worrying about myself as a player. I started to understand things a little bit better and what made a team work in terms of systems and structure and how you built your team personnel wise and things like that. And then when I got to my last year pro, I really got leaned upon heavily with the coach to do a lot of teaching. You know, I was a fifth year guy. I'd been a captain for 4 years and I was kind of a mentor to some of the guys, even though I was only 28 years of age. I was kind of an older, younger guy, so to speak. And he really kind of put me in a mentorship role. And I really enjoyed that part of it. I was planning on actually continuing to play. And I was home in the summer of 1998, working out in the gym, getting ready to play again. And one of the players at the Acadia University where I used to play asked me if I'd go in and meet with the head coach, who I'd never met. He wasn't the coach that I had had. And he said one of the longtime assistants who was there when I was a player had recently left and I'd ever thought about coaching. He'd heard, you know, good things about me and my character and wanted to know if I was interested. And I jumped on it right away because, you know, coaching jobs are hard to come by when you're leaving the game. This was a good one. It's where my wife's hometown was, where we settled in the summers. I won a national championship there as a player, so had deep roots with the school, and I gave it a shot. And I'll be honest with you, I missed playing every day till Christmas. Every day I missed playing and was wondering if I did the right thing. But after the second half, when the second half of the season started and I settled in, I knew this was for me.
I mean, I'm looking at your career. 2 years at Acadia University, assistant coach there. Then it was at Lubbock Cotton Kings, and then another year with Columbia Inferno, all assistant coaching jobs. Did those 4 years make you decide that being a head coach was what you wanted to do? Is that an ideal stepping stone for you to learn the ropes and get used to what you would be doing maybe later on?
Yeah, it did for sure. So, you know, university coaching is a lot different than pro. So when I left Acadia and I went down as an assistant in Lubbock, we ended up going to the league finals that year, and I was coaching with a guy who had actually been my coach. So it was really good. It was a good partnership, a good feel, a good fit. I was actually coaching some players that I had played with too. So that was kind of fun. I was offered a head coaching job right after that season, but turned it down because I thought I still needed more time. I wanted to really hone my craft. And I went to the East Coast League. We're an expansion team. And at that time we had the best expansion record in ECHL history. So about March of that year, I started getting calls from teams for the following year. And I ended up going to Cincinnati and working for a great ownership group there that I actually worked for them for several years. They owned the team in Long Beach. They owned the team in Texas. And I kind of just followed them around. They brought me in to prop up a bad franchise, kind of turn it around, and then they would sell it. And then I would move on to their next franchise. And it was fun. I love the challenge of taking over the, you know, the weak teams and making them contenders. And my first year as the head coach, we ended up going to game 7 of the semifinals of the league. And I honestly believe we should have been in the Kelly Cup, and we would have won it because the team that beat us ended up sweeping in the finals that year. So that was a little disappointing, but it was a heck of a run.
I mean, it's one of those things where I think if you have a kind of bad start, or it's maybe not the job for you, and you discover that early on, it's not going to be a lot of fun. We've had 3 coaches in our past, you may be aware of, who've coached the club and then they've never coached since. It's just not been for them for whatever reason. So who were your big influences in those earlier days as you were making your first steps into coaching?
Well, when I first started coaching, I worked with a guy named Kevin Dickey at Acadia University. He was a brilliant tactician guy, just really, really smart. Had been in the Hockey Canada program, coached Team Canada World Juniors. Really, really a brilliant guy. So he was a real good mentor. Mike Johnson with the Portland Winterhawks. He's been an assistant coach in the NHL with LA, Vancouver, and a head coach with the Pittsburgh Penguins. He was an Acadia alumni as well as he's from the same hometown as me and knew me as a player in college. So he kind of took me under his wing a little bit, you know, through when I started working with the national team, the Canada's national team, when they were full time. And when I started doing my levels and working with Hockey Canada, he was a real good influence for me. And then when I get into pro coaching, a gentleman by the name of Claude Noel, who was the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets for several seasons, longtime American League coach as well. He's from my dad's hometown, and we got to know each other really well. And even though we were rivals in the East Coast League, he was a great, great influence, really took me under his wing and taught me about, you know, pro coaching and preparation and, you know, how to be flexible and not so rigid and things like that. And those guys were great, really good mentors.
So how much of it is using information you've picked up from former coaches, guys you've worked with, you know, and using that, integrating it into your own knowledge of the game, plus being your own man as well, adapting your own systems, putting your own things into play? How much is there a balance there in doing that?
Well, I think when you're younger, you can use the influence that you learn from, you know, other coaches and things like that. But as you progress and get more comfortable in your own skin and you mature, you know, you become more and more, it's all your influence. So I would say now after, you know, this is my 24th year as a coach, you know, it's my own style and I have my own routine of preparation for the team. You know, how we're going to run practice for the week, you know, leading up to games and what we need to work on. You know, everybody does their thing different. For me, you know, beginning of the week, it's about pace, go, 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 because you got lots of energy. You're coming off a day off. You know, as you move on the week, you start to taper your practices down because you want to, you know, save some energy for the games. You shorten up your practices a little bit, but they still remain intense. And you know, towards the end of the week, you start to specify on things you need to work on, you know, for us, special teams, power play, penalty kill, transition, you know, breakouts versus a forecheck, those types of things. And it'll change from week to week. You know, all of a sudden, maybe you're weak at one thing. Well, that's what you're going to specify in practice this week. Okay, you played Guildford last time and you struggled in this area. Well, we're going to focus on that this week. So you really learn what becomes important each and every week and each and every time that you step on the ice for practice.
And I guess it's fair to say you're always learning on the job as well, even after the years of experience you have. Every day is a school day in so many respects.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't be too stubborn not to learn and learn from other teams and learn things from other people. So, you know, Scott Bowman, Ken Hitchcock, those guys, brilliant coaches. I remember having a beer in Calgary with Ken Hitchcock one night, and he said, if you're too old to learn, get out of the game, you know, because he's sitting around with a bunch of coaches that, and I was coaching major junior at the time, and he wanted to learn from me, you know, what ideas that I had that maybe he could incorporate in his job, because you always want to have fresh ideas. And any of these conferences that I've ever gone to, especially the Hockey Canada guys, the guys that coached the, you know, the world championship team, the Olympic team, the world junior team, those guys want to learn from everybody. They might not ever use it that particular time, but they're going to put it in the memory bank and use it somewhere down the line. And just that sharing of ideas is what makes us all better.
I notice as well, looking back in your career, there's a couple of other teams. You're doing it with Clan now. You're also the director of hockey operations. Tell us a bit more about what that role entails compared to being a coach, which we all assume has been on the ice, working with the guys, you know, getting the systems into play. Director of hockey operations is a bit more, I don't know, you tell me, what does that involve?
Well, in the East Coast League, you are everything. So I was actually telling my equipment manager this the other day. The East Coast League is so good at preparing you for next level hockey because you have to really manage your time. The job's only about 35% coaching because you're recruiting, you're negotiating contracts, you work on player apartments, you work on furniture delivery, you work on utility hookup, making sure the rent, the utilities are paid each and every month. You do immigration, you do player travel in, player travel out. You have a player called up to the American Hockey League. You're working on travel for that player to go up. You're working on how to get him to the airport. You get a player sent down from the American League, his flight coming in. Where is he going to stay? What open apartment is available? They have to put him in a hotel. How is he getting from the airport to the arena? I've done equipment ordering, community service appointments, you know, scheduling guys going out to do that. I mean, it's endless. The player immigration is quite challenging as well in the United States. So I've done all of those things. Plus, on top of that, you have a daily salary cap in the ECHL that you have to fall under. There's paperwork because there's a players union. So when a player goes up, he comes off your cap. The league has to have in the players union subsequent paperwork that goes along with that. If you lose a player, say that's making $700 a week, you could take that $700 and you can spread it around to different players on your team and give them a little bit more money. And then you have to do salary change forms. And all of this stuff has to fit within your daily salary cap all the time. So you have to be organized beyond belief. And I had more spreadsheets going, apartment spreadsheets, cap spreadsheets, daily cap spreadsheets, weekly cap spreadsheets, because I was in charge of payroll. On top of that, as well as securing an NHL affiliation, I'm the one that always had to go out and get that done, and I had to do the legal paperwork that went with it.
Busy man.
Well, a lot of my days, and all the years I coached in the ECHL, I never had an assistant coach. All my days usually started at 6 a.m. and finished at 8. And summer times, I had three phones going, two cell phones and a home phone. I drove my wife crazy for the first 5 or 6 years because I was possessed about recruiting, to the point where I finally got into a routine that in the summers, Friday at noon, I was done. There was no more talking on the phone. Family's going to the beach. Family's going to play golf. We're going to do something. I'll pick up where I left off on Monday. And I learned to balance the family time, with the hockey time, but I would have to say, and my wife would agree with me early on, it was 99% hockey and not enough family. But I learned to balance it. Our first family vacation with our son was 2005 in Long Beach. And we decided to go to Las Vegas. It was about a 4-hour drive. And I'd been to Vegas because they had a team in the league at the time. And we stayed at the host hotel for the team. And literally we checked in, got our son Brett in his bathing suit, grabbed a couple of drinks and went down to the pool. And I sat down on the chair and I had a file folder full of names and phone numbers and started recruiting. And she took off for 2 hours, wouldn't talk to me. Almost ruined the vacation. And that's a God honest true story. So, but I told her, I said, I ended up signing 2 good players on that trip, so it was well worth it.
Well, my next question was going to be, and I think it's probably on the minds of those listening right now, is, you know, you shut your phone off on Friday at lunchtime, and that was you till Monday. What if anybody phoned in the weekend?
Well, I didn't shut it off. I kept it on. I just promised her I wouldn't make any calls. I didn't say that I didn't answer the phone.
And if you listen, Mrs. Cameron, I'm sure he'll apologize when you see him. Anyway.
She will listen to this and agree 100%. But, yeah, there's a lot of things you do. And I forgot about, you're in charge of per diem for the players for road trips. You're in charge of booking buses, hotels, everything.
Wow.
So, you know, when I talked to Gareth about this job and he said about director of hockey operations, I started to laugh at him because, like, this doesn't entail anything compared to what I was used to.
Hi, Clan fans. I'm Cody Saul, and this is your Clan Chat.
So what does make you tick then, Malcolm? What gets you going? You know, what gets you through the day? What gets you through game days?
The game. Simply. looking forward to the game. But, you know, I love the prep work that goes into it, too. Like, I enjoy practice. You know, I'm 52. I've been coaching for 24 years and have had a good career. But I still love the teaching aspect of it. You know, the fact that we got guys that still want to learn each and every day and I want to pass on my knowledge to make them better. I enjoy the teaching part of the process. And, of course, you love winning. But, you know, it's not that. I mean, even the bus rides I still enjoy. You know, after a big win and hearing the guys in the back playing cards and having fun, seeing them banter around in the locker room and how guys joke around in practice. I mean, that still drives me every day to go to the rink. And, you know, last year when I was home, I did a lot of hockey camps in Florida. I've got a good business there and I teach private lessons and I was making really good money. And it financially, it would have been a really good chance to stay, but I miss this, you know, and I was helping, you know, I'd help coach teams in the springtime and the summer, but there's nothing like this and being around a team and being a part of the team. And I love the personalities of the players and getting to know them and, you know, joking around with them and things like that. That's what makes this job fun and special and unique.
Which brings me nicely to my next question, actually. We've talked at length about the coaching side of it, but there's the managing the personalities as well, the guys in the room dealing with those guys, man management side of it. So how do you, or what is rather the best way of managing the personalities in the locker room, maybe dealing with any resistance you might experience if there's certain plays that guys aren't comfortable with? How do you manage that?
Well, you know, the first thing is you set in stone very early in the season in training camp the style that you're going to play. And the way, you know, it's Glasgow Clan hockey. This is our brand of hockey. And you have rules, you know, there's universal rules of hockey of how you're going to live and abide by in terms of your play. You know, and I'll give you an example. You're not going to go on a 1-on-4 and try and beat everybody while you're on a line change because that's going to lead to a 4-on-0 going the other way. Mm. Those types of things. And you get those core values in your team set in stone right away. You have your leadership group buy into it. And then you lean on your leaders to enforce those things so that it's not just a dictatorship in the locker room. It's a cohesive group of people that have bought in to what you need to do to be successful. And, you know, when you're younger and you're a younger coach and maybe a first year coach, you know, you kind of maybe feel you're autocratic and it's your word and that's it. But you also want to give the players some input in terms of how their locker room, how their team plays and help hold each other accountable. So it's much easier for the coach when your leadership group is doing the right things day in and day out. And they're also holding everybody accountable because they're doing the right things day in and day out. And I've been very blessed with a good leadership group here. You know, Matt Haywood, Dyson Stevenson, Matthew Waugh, Cody Soule, Miko Vainen, and guys work hard every day. You know, they practice hard. They play hard. They do the little things sometimes that fans don't notice, but coaches and teammates appreciate. And that's very important. And, you know, you also have to learn to have fun. You know, you've got to learn the temperature of your locker room. You're going through a bit of a struggle like we are right now. Are you hard on them? You know, are they a team that can you can push and push and push? Or are they a team that needs a little ray of sunshine when things are looking bleak? And that's all knowing the personalities on your team. You know, you can only beat a dead horse along. You know, sometimes you have to give it a little bit of sunlight and a little bit of food and water to make it go again. So that comes with experience, Craig.
Now, the thing I get from you when I speak to you post-game is your straight-talking style, and it goes down well with the fans. They appreciate the honesty. And you said that to me from day one. That was something you always wanted to be, honest. And I get the impression you speaking the way you do with me post-game, particularly after a defeat, is what you would tell the guys in the locker room as well. There wouldn't be any difference in that. But there's got to be a time in your long career, there's got to be players that maybe don't like that. Again, how do you deal with that?
Well, you know what? If they don't like it, then don't play that way. Right? You know, at the end of the day, you have to be accountable. Sports is no different than life. You know, if you're not performing at your sales job, you know, and you're not selling product, you're not going to have that job very long, right? You know, excuses can only take you so far. But, you know, for me, the core things are sticking to a game plan, working hard, and being selfless, not selfish. If you do those things, you will have a chance to win on any given night in any league that you play in. And those are kind of our core values. The only time I really get upset is when we don't stick to those three or four things that are very, very important. And as a player, I hated it when a coach came in and wasn't, you know, was fluffy. You know, guys, I know we lost 6-0 today, but we'll go get them, you know, next day type of thing. I hated that. I'd rather him come in and tell us the truth. Here's why you lost. Okay. We have this in us, but we didn't bring this today. This is what we need to do to be successful. And players would always appreciate honesty. They don't like BS. And that's 100%. Guys will tell you, they can take bad news, but they can't take BS.
On to the next stage of your career, and I'm curious where this goes, because you had your long career in the ECHL. I think you've got one of the highest win rates in the ECHL history, which is fantastic. But in 2019, your career went in a different direction, off to Italy with Calterne or Caldaro, the second tier Italian team. Why did you decide to go to Europe?
Well, after my first ECHL stint, I went to coach major junior hockey, which is something I really wanted to do. So I'll back it up a little bit with that. Major junior is totally different than pro hockey, even though the guys are treated like NHL players. A major junior, for our fans that don't know, is the biggest feeder league to the National Hockey League. 20%, I think it's 25% of the Western Hockey League. The NHL is from the Western Hockey League. That's one out of every four players. So, like, you know, guys that I would have coached against that would maybe be familiar to our fans, Leon Draisaitl in Edmonton. Saw him too much in 2 years. He was in Prince Albert. Ryan Pulock, who was a first rounder, plays for the New York Islanders. Josh Morrissey, Jake Virtanen, Vancouver, Matt Dumba. I mean, it's everybody in the league had a big star. I think we had 7 or 8 guys playing the NHL the 3 years I was in Regina. One of them is a cup winner, Chandler Stevenson with the Washington Capitals. He's now the first line center of the Las Vegas Golden Knights. So you're really, and the kids go from the age of 16 to 20. You're only allowed 3 20-year-olds on your team. So the majority are, you know, 19 and 18 when you're a really good team, but you're dealing with kids, some of them at 16 that are left home for the very first time and they're going in a billet situation. You also have probably 30 to 40% of your players in school. The rest of them aren't in school. So the kids that are in school, we would practice at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We would have our non-school kids come in the morning because we wanted to get them out of bed and be productive. And we would send them out to do different community service projects. And, you know, that was a really eye-opening experience for a lot of these kids. So, you know, you're managing a lot of different things. You're managing agents, you're managing parents, you're managing billets, young people's personalities that are in a pro job. You know, we're playing in front of anywhere between 3,000 to 12, 14,000 people on national television in NHL buildings. You know, there's 40 to 50 scouts at each game, and they're expected to win. So there's a lot of pressure on those kids. And it's some of them, you know, thrive, some of them crack. And you have to be there because you have to also recognize when a person is struggling. And maybe it's not hockey related. It's society struggle, homesickness. Their girlfriend broke up with them. They're failing in school. They're too afraid to or embarrassed to ask for help, those types of things. So for me, those were the closest relationships. It's different in pro when you're dealing with guys with families and wives and kids. You know, when practice is over or an hour after practice, they don't want to hear from coach anymore. They want to go with their families and their buddies. But in junior hockey, you really have to take care of the kids even at nighttime, and your phone has to be available, and you need to take them out for a coffee or out for lunch to see how they're doing emotionally and things like that. You know, so that part of building relationships with the young men was extremely rewarding. It really was. And I enjoyed that thoroughly. Now to the Cal Turn thing. And
you know, yeah.
Well, I decided, at the end of the Wichita thing, I was a little bit burned out from ECHL coaching. It's just, you know, you build a really, really good team. Then you get completely dismantled. All the work you did in the summer goes away when you win, because all the AHL teams just, they pick your best players apart. You get nothing for them. Mm-hmm. And you can't replace those guys once the season starts. You know, you lose your top three scorers. There's not another three top scorers just sitting in the wings waiting for you. So it burns you out. And there's no question that hockey, that level can burn you out. I was really anticipating getting into scouting. And I had an opportunity. I felt maybe to start part-time with an NHL club doing some pro scouting in and around, you know, the Southeast United States area where I wouldn't have to venture too far from Florida. But I got the itch in August, and it was late, you know, and there was really only, you know, one job available. My agent secured it. But I also knew that, you know, in Europe, coaches get fired very quickly. So he said, go there, bide your time, wait, somebody will get fired and you'll get an opportunity in a better league. And I did. And 6 weeks I was in Italy, and then I was off to Romania.
And now you're here.
And now I'm here. And this is, you know, ideally, I wish it wasn't under these circumstances with all this COVID craziness, but I did get a chance over Christmas to go down to Edinburgh and tour around down there and Glasgow on Christmas Eve, and took lots of pictures. I was actually in Edinburgh doing a three-way call on WhatsApp video with my wife and kids and my mom and dad back in Canada, so they got a chance to see all the sights with me, and it was really amazing.
Hey Purple Army, this is Kevin McCoskrie. Don't forget to subscribe to the Clan Chat podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Audioboom to hear from your favourite team.
So we're getting near the end. Obviously, in 24 years, the game changes, alters, things come in, different things. So do you feel you've adapted and changed through those years? And if so, how?
Oh, no question. I first of all, there was a two-line pass when I started coaching. You know, now you can pass the puck all the way from your goal line to the far blue line. Well, you couldn't do that when I first started coaching. You know, you could only pass it across one line, not two lines. So, you know, stretching the game and utilizing more of the ice for things like regroups and transition and power play breakouts, that's all new technical stuff. The players have changed. You know, when I first started coaching pro hockey, there was probably six, seven, eight guys you know, that were capable and willing and wanting to drop the gloves each and every night. Obviously, as we moved along and more focus on head injuries and player safety and player health, those types of players have gone the way of the dodo bird. I mean, you still got guys that'll fight and stuff like that. But as we all know, that's become a less prevalent part of the game. So the game has definitely sped up, has become more skilled. And with that, you have to learn to teach the game without the puck, because you only have the puck for a certain part of the time. So a lot of coaching now has become play without the puck and how you defend. And coaches have gotten so good at that, from the NHL all the way down to junior now. That's really a hard part of teaching, because everybody wants to play offense all the time, but you have to learn to play when you don't have it. The 50% of the time you don't have the puck. So, you know, it was, the game was probably a little bit slower, less skilled, a little bit maybe, you know, grab and things like that. I mean, you used to be able to get away with tackling guys on the ice, and we called it water skiing behind with your stick and holding guys up. You can't do any of that now. Now it's a fast player's game. And so when you recruit now, you're looking for certain types of players. And for me, the three mandates that you look for, you know, if I was recruiting starting March 1st for the 22 season, the three mandates you look for: can they skate? I'm looking for skating, number one. I'm looking for hockey sense. Can they think the game, and can they think the game fast? And number three, compete. Do they compete for loose pucks? Do they get to the dirty areas? You know, are they going to compete when they're tired, compete when they're beat up? Those are the three things you look for. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, maybe you weren't looking for that. You were looking for big. You were looking for tough. You were looking for guys that could intimidate. You know, hockey sense maybe wasn't quite an issue for your 4, 5, and 6 defensemen, or your 7, 8, 9, 10 forward. Now you got to have everybody that can play, because at the end of the day, if you lose guys to injury and you don't have those guys at the bottom of your lineup ready to fill in and still be productive, you can't win.
Now, I know during this COVID shutdown at the moment, you're keeping an eye on your son's games. In fact, you had a game today, I believe, as well.
Yeah, he's got another one today. It's his 14th birthday. So, it's hard to believe he's 14. But, yeah, he's back playing for a team right now in Florida. He was in Edmonton, Alberta, from September until the Christmas break, and minus 25. So he's happy to be back in Florida wearing shorts to the rink right now.
And he seems to be going quite well with it. Anytime we speak, you mention him quite a lot. How proud are you that he's taken on the game, and he seems to be doing quite well?
Well, actually, both my sons have been really good. They're really two different kinds of players, too. My oldest boy is in his fourth year, a junior, 20 years old, and he's hoping to get a school commitment this year so he can play college hockey, and he's got some schools that are interested in him right now. So he's also home for the Christmas break. He goes back January the 2nd. So he's had a... You know, he's become really motivated. You know, he's got himself in great shape, and he's very, very passionate about it. He was a little bit of a late starter because where I was coaching didn't really have any hockey for him. So he was late starting the game. He really didn't start playing high-level hockey till he was 8 years old versus a lot of kids his age at 4 and 5. So, but I give him a lot of credit. He's got a tremendous work ethic, and he brought himself along. And when a lot of people didn't think he was ever going to make it as a player, he ended up playing 3 years of midget triple-A hockey and now 4 years as a junior. A lot of people never would have thought he could have done that.
And, of course, they'll have their own coaches as well. So how hard is it to separate Malcolm the dad from Malcolm the coach?
Ask my wife that question. Real hard.
I bet it is.
Yeah, real hard. When you watch games, sometimes you're just like, you know, I try not to coach them, but I do give them advice. And actually, just before I get on the call with you, I'd watch my son's game today, and it's a little different style than what he's been playing all year. So I'll just give him a little different advice on what he needs to do to be better. And, you know, you try not to beat them down a little bit. You know, my wife says all the time, it can't be just 24 hours of hockey. Like, you know, the poor woman, she's been with me since 1990. So that's 3 years of college hockey, 5 years of pro, and 24 years of coaching. And that's all she's ever heard, you know, like, you know, and then of course, with two hockey playing boys, it's just all the time. And not that she doesn't love hockey, because she does. She loved hockey right from the time she was born. But, you know, you get to the point now where it's like, do we have to talk about it? Can't we talk about, you know, a vacation, or can we talk about, you know, going to the beach or going out in the boat or something like that? So I get it. It's just, but she knew, you know, like she always says, I knew what I was getting into when I married you. Like, you were just, you know, you're passionate about the game. And I have been since I was 3 years old.
So if there's any young coaches that come to you, they're looking to get into coaching properly, what advice would you give them?
My first advice is, make sure that your family is ready for this, because they're along with you for the ride. And that's the biggest thing. If you don't have the support of your family, it's going to be a real hard job to do. And, you know, it's a little different for me now because my kids are a little bit older, so I can be away from them. They're a little bit more independent. My 20-year-old's been on his own playing junior hockey since he was 16. So, you know, my younger guy, he went away to play this year away from mom and dad. So that made it a little bit easier. But the 1 year that I was away from him coaching in Wichita in 16, 17 was tough. You know, those times you don't get back. But I couldn't have, you know, I couldn't have done it without them. But, you know, since I became a coach, I've coached in Wolfville, Nova Scotia, Lubbock, Texas, Columbia, South Carolina, Cincinnati, Columbus, Ohio, Corpus Christi, Texas, Long Beach, California, Beaumont, Texas, Fort Myers, Regina, Saskatchewan, Penticton, BC, Wichita. And they moved with me in all of those places. So, you know, we had a home base, and we finally bought a house in 2006 in Texas. And that was kind of our home base for those couple of years. And then when I went to Florida in 2008, we bought the house there. So we have always had a home base since 2008 to go back in the off season. But when you move around a lot, you know, it's good and bad for the kids, because they become accustomed to making new friends very, very quickly. And, you know, especially my younger boy, he can make friends in 5 minutes, but it's also hard when they got to say goodbye and you're not coming back. And that makes it hard on them too. So, you know, they learn to become, you know, self-sufficient and a little bit mentally strong, but it's good that they have a home base in Florida and they have their Florida friends. And then wherever dad was coaching, their friends there. But if any young coach is thinking of doing this, make sure your wife and your kids are on board, because if they're not, it's trouble.
Malcolm, this has been brilliant. A real insight into life as a coach from you. It's been fantastic. Greatly appreciate your time as well. And we can't wait to see you behind the bench very soon.
Well, I'm sure our fans appreciate it. It's just not all wearing nice suits and a nice tie behind the bench. There's a lot to it. And, There's you know, it does, you know, obviously, like any job, Craig, it gets very frustrating, but the rewards, you know, go beyond the wins and losses too. You know, it really does. It's you don't realize that when you're younger, you know, and I probably didn't. And that's the one thing I would take back in my coaching career when I was young, that was that I was more ambitious and more driven to winning than enjoying the part of the job that I should have been enjoying. And that was more about relationships and visiting the cities that I went to. Like, I went to tons of cities in the ECHL that I'd love to go visit on vacation, because I never saw anything other than the hotel and the rink, you know? So, you know, those types of things you'd like to get back. But now I try and see as much as I can.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Malcolm. Thank you very much for your time.
Anytime. Take care.
That's it. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with another Clan Chat download soon. For news and information, check out the website on clanihc.com, or check us out on social media by liking the Facebook page, or follow us on Twitter, Instagram or TikTok, where you'll find us at ClanIHC. Keep subscribing from your podcast provider to stay up to date with your favourite team as well. Talk to you soon. Bye for now. Thank you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.